This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
And welcome to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And you're on the Spirit Lounge tonight with Mark and Claudine and Rachel.
Yeah, you are.
Hello.
And tonight we're going to be talking about religious clothing or things that you wear of religious nature later in the show. So stay tuned for that. If you have any questions for us, as always, please send us a text on 0427JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au, or you can contact us via the contact us or part of the app.
Yeah, exactly right. So guess what we have on tonight, guys?
Clothes.
Are you ready for a miracle? Yeah, I am. So we have a holy day back again. It's been a couple of weeks since we had a holy day. We've just had so much other stuff going on, and we've taken up holy days as the entire show. So why not have a separate holy day this week? And a good place to start is with Baisakhi, which is a vibrant harvest festival of the Punjab. So obviously this is a Sikh festival. This year it's celebrated on April 14th, so that's today in Australia. But this does change yearly based on the Sikh calendar. They go off a much, much different calendar to us. So it's always on the first day of the I forget what it was called. I didn't write it down, but it was, yeah, the first day of a particular part of the Sikh calendar. And that it usually falls around April or May each year. So the original Baisakhi day was March 30 in 1699, and it's super important. And why is it super important, I hear you ask? Well, on this day, the Guru Gobind Singh, I even practiced this one, he was the 10th guru. He founded the Akal Khalsa, which is the community of the pure. This group led an important role in resistance against the Mughal rule, and now each year Baisakhi is celebrated enthusiastically by all Sikhs. So other than political rulings, the Guru Gobind Singh also sought to eliminate social discrimination of people in different castes and statuses of society. So he's a pretty loved guru of the Sikh people, so I think that's why this festival in particular is celebrated quite enthusiastically. So, fun fact, Guru Gobind Singh decided to give every Sikh the surname Singh, which means lion, and he did this after doing away with discrimination, which allows all Sikhs the opportunity to live lives full of courage, sacrifice, and equality, which is why he decided to change everybody's surname to Singh. And then he also didn't discriminate against Sikh women and said all women embody royalty, and therefore changed their names to Kaur, which means princess. So
is all that
Kaur?
I thought it was Kaur. K-A-U-R.
Yeah, that's right. So Kaur, which, yeah, means princess. So that's pretty cool. You're either a princess or a lion if you're a Sikh. So how do they celebrate? They have morning prayers each day, and after their prayers, they get a special dessert known as the Kada Prasad, which sounds amazing because we always talk about food here on the Spirit Lounge for some reason. So they get food. And then they have Langar. So this is where volunteers serve free vegetarian meals to the community. So they welcome anybody to this part of the celebration of Baisakhi. So they're outsiders are welcome. And absolutely anybody can volunteer to serve food. It's not just Sikhs themselves. It's not, you know, men or women. It's anybody is able to do that, which is also very nice. And then they have parades and processions. So they carry the scripture around while members of the Sikh community sing songs, prayers, and dance. And if you have seen Punjabi dancing, it is incredible. And they have a very specific special dance for Baisakhi, which I looked up, and it's so vibrant and so colorful. So in relation to tonight's topic, the celebration of Baisakhi, men and women usually wear bright colored clothes. So they steer clear of, you know, the whites and greys. So the men traditionally will wear turbans and kurtas with brightly coloured waistcoats, and the women wear lehenga choli or salwar kameez suits. But I'll go into more details about what they are later in the show. And you are on the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Sorry, Mark, stole your glory there.
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it, really?
So we did get a message through about that song. Thanks, Paige, for messaging in. She said, bangin' tune there, gang, better than the original. I agree. I actually really enjoyed that song, and I got up and did my version of the Punjabi dance, which obviously you can't see, but I have my hands in the air and I'm doing the twisty hand.
And our therapy will start tomorrow. But anyhow, we're talking about clothes tonight on the Spirit Lounge. And if you want to join in the conversation, as Paige did, you can text us on 0427-JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au or contact us via the Joy app. If you've got any questions about religious clothing, send them in and we'll try and answer them to the best of our abilities.
Or if you have information about religious clothing that we might not know about, if you are religious and there are things that people in your religion or culture wear, let us know and tell us why.
You'd be very interested here.
Definitely.
Now, you were talking about it's the Sikh festival on at the moment and talking about some clothing that they wear.
Yes, Rachel. I was. So I'm going to go into a bit of detail. It's actually funny, going off their names, I wasn't sure what these items of clothing were. But, you know, a little search in Professor Google tells me that I do actually know what they are when the beautiful images come up. So the first item I mentioned was the turban. So most of us know what a turban is, but the Sikhs specifically call their turban dastar. And yeah, so it's a very, everyone knows what a turban is, right? Yes.
It's
yes.
Basically a thing that you wind around your head, and there's different varieties, but I think the Sikh one's the most, well known. It's quite large because they've got, because one of the rules about being a Sikh is that you don't cut your hair. So you have, you need a very long or large turban to wrap all your very long hair
around, yes. So it has been an important part of the Sikh religion since the time of the very first guru. Guru Angad Dev honoured Guru Amar Das with a very special dastar when he was declared the next guru. So that's kind of how it's been passed on. And then the second item of clothing I mentioned is the kurta, which originally was male clothing, but women also wear kurtas now as well. So it is the traditional, it's also known as the... I'm trying to remember the name, straight cut shirt. So it's long sleeved, sits usually just above the knees or at the knees, and traditionally does not have a collar, although new modern versions of the kurta are often made with collars that stick up, but that's not traditional. So so it doesn't have any specific religious meaning, but it's now an item of clothing that is often worn over jeans. You can also wear it over, it says, pajamas and leggings, but most commonly these days the kurta is worn over jeans. Then we have... Now, the one that I had written down was called the Lehenga Choli, but it is also known as the Gagra Choli, and this is the traditional beautiful dresses. They're big and flowing and usually have bits of material wrapped around the middle of them. There's often a bit cut out in the middle. Think like a belly dancer's dress. So the big flared skirts, this is the traditional dress that Sikh women would wear at this festival.
Different to a sari?
Different to a sari. I will get that difference for you. We might have to come back to that. And then there's also the shalwar kameez, and this is the two-piece that women wear. So it's the the pants that are usually beautifully hand-sewn with the slightly longer shirt/dress over the top, also very beautiful. So, yeah.
I think that's often worn with a shawl as well or a scarf.
Yes.
So these are, and I think a lot of these items of clothing are not specific to Sikhs. They're worn throughout South Asia, throughout India.
Yeah, so I think it's more of their celebratory outfits. So the Sikhs wear it during celebration periods, which most of the Southeast Asian and countries also wear these outfits during celebration times as well. So it's less of a religious outfit, but more of a celebratory that they happen to wear during religious events.
So the Sikhs are known for their long hair and their turbans, and there is actually a set of items that everybody who practices Sikhism is supposed to wear or carry with them, and they call it the five Ks, which come after their names in Punjab.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing. And I'm not going to try and pronounce them, the original five Ks, but they are basically that they're not the first item is the hair, that you don't cut your hair, so, and therefore many men will wear a turban around that. The next is a comb that you wear in your hair. Then there's a metal bracelet. Then there's a style of cotton undergarments, and we might come back to this later, because Sikhism is not the only religion that has special undergarments. And what I think is the most interesting is the fifth item, which is the kirpan, a sword, which originally was actually used as a sword, but is now, I think, mostly ceremonial. But every Sikh is supposed to carry this with them all the time. So
ooh.
I'd really love to know how that goes in airports and similar situations. I'm assuming there must be special rules, because I know there are, in some countries, there are other rules about that men who wear turbans are in some places exempt from wearing motorcycle helmets. This is what my parents told me, that because they've got their hair and the turban, that is enough to protect them, or that they don't need to wear a motorcycle helmet. So perhaps there's a special rule for the knife as well.
Very possible.
There is. It depends where you are. There are some. There's the way some parts of the world get around the knife thing is about its length. So it's of a certain length, and therefore there's a exemption in the law that allows knives of a certain length to be carried. Wow. And so that's how in some societies that's how the law gets around this because it's essentially a concealed weapon.
Yeah.
So that's how the law moves around this in terms of being able to accommodate a faith group and allow them to continue that faith, which I think is a really good way of looking at wiggling around to allow people to carry on a tradition that is a legitimate tradition for them and part of their beliefs. So I think that's really good. So, yeah, it's about length in some jurisdictions.
And now I just did a quick little search about the difference between the sari and the choli. Just visually, this sari is more tight-fitted, so I think traditionally these days you're more likely to see a young woman wearing a sari, which is it's more fitted and then has the shawl, whereas the choli is quite flared. It's like a big, you know, when you twirl around skirt, something that goes fully out round.
It's roomy.
It's roomy, but yeah, but it's still like incredibly beautiful. So, well, going on from the Sikhs.
Well, this question actually started. It was one of our last questions last week for one of our FAQ questions, and I think it was Rachel who asked Mark about wearing the kippah. And
yes,
when I was looking up various kinds of clothing in different religious traditions, it does seem that headwear or hats or shawls or covering the head is a common theme in many religions, which I haven't found why that is, but I think that's an interesting question, and it's actually something it's one of the most visible things about a religion in some cases, and it's been something that's contested in various places. France for a long time has made it, I think, difficult in some places to wear certain religious outfits or signs of religious faith.
Yeah.
And
in terms of public buildings and employees of government institutions, and as far as children wearing a cross or a crucifix as a on a necklace, that sort of stuff is to my understanding banned in France. That said, if you go to a religious school, it's totally acceptable. It's just in the secular.
Oh, okay.
So the government-funded schools or working in the public service.
Okay, so it's not as widespread as I thought. But
it's really interesting because if you walk around your workplace, you'll see a vast number of people wear very discreet, usually, but often usually visible signs of their religious traditions. So a common one is a cross. There's various takes on that. People wear, and it's in Australia, or for most people, it's not confronting. But in France, it would be illegal if you worked for government.
But what about people who wear things like crosses that are just wearing them for fashion as well? Mm. Because sometimes religious things are fashionable as well. Like, for example, I've also worn a turban-like thing on my head, so a head covering that covered all of my hair and had like a nice little twist at the front, which some Muslim women wear a covering similar to the one that I'd worn as well, and it was just because I was having a bad hair day. So like, it's like I'm not trying to offend anybody of that religion by doing so, but some of these things have become quite fashionable. So is that acceptable?
And the interesting thing is that some of these customs have started off as practical things and become part of a religion. Especially, I think, for those religions that have originated in hot places, wearing something on your head is a very sensible thing to do.
Yes.
And then they've become associated with a particular religion where it's turned into a rule. So in a sense, wearing a turban or a headscarf doesn't necessarily mean that you're part of that religion and there shouldn't be a problem with it.
Yeah, and as well, based on where people live. So in the Middle East, you have to wear sleeved clothes and whatnot. And if you are seen leaving the airport without sleeved clothes on, can be a big issue. And Paige knows that firsthand about leaving the airport in Middle Eastern countries without having your shoulders covered.
Are there signs in the airport saying you need to?
Oh, there should be. I don't know if there are. But yeah, so that's another thing that, whether it's religious or cultural as well. So some things are just cultural, but because of the country's inherent religion.
A special request for our special guest, Clayton, who's just popped into the studio.
I just like hanging around, Joy.
Because we were, you're on the Spirit Lounge, and we've been talking about clothes and religion, and we were talking about special Sikh underwear earlier, and Clayton mentioned that he knows a bit about Mormon underwear as well, if that's the right term. I don't know if that's what you call it.
Oh, I don't know the right term for it. But I used to date a Mormon boy when I was living in Hong Kong, and I have seen in the flesh the actual Mormon underwear. In the cotton, yes, very nice. I asked him what's the significance, and he said he's not allowed to say. So there's apparently an embargo of explaining the underwear to people.
To people who aren't Mormon.
Yeah, so he, because he was, apart from the fact he clearly had sex with men, he was quite a strict Mormon otherwise.
Had sex with men who were not Mormon.
Yeah,
well,
that too.
So
yeah, well, I'm not sure if they're supposed to have sex with each other either, though. So, it's, yeah.
I've always wondered about those little going out on 2x2 in their missionary work.
Yes, I have wondered things too, but that's a different story for a different later show. So, yeah.
There you go.
So all we know is that it's special secret underwear that...
So they're called temple garments.
Oh.
Is apparently what they're called. Mm-hmm. That's the underwear. It's not what you'd wear on the outer. And apparently you're not supposed to take them off unless what you're doing you possibly couldn't do without taking them off. So the example is swimming. So you're allowed to take them off to go swimming, but you must put them back on straight away afterwards. And you're not supposed to display them for people who won't understand their significance, which goes back to what Clayton was saying. I can't tell you what they're really about because you're not part of the clan. So,
well, he definitely displayed them, though. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And definitely the activities we were doing you couldn't do with them on, really. So that's probably works out well.
Is it two separate pieces or is it a onesie?
Two separate pieces.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's, so we...
Oh, so it's top and bottom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we looked at some pictures before and it does look like a T-shirt with little shorties. So...
Yeah.
And just looks like... something that you would wear under your clothes when it's cold.
Yeah, and it's sort of like the thermal underwear.
Long johns, yeah.
And it has a little cross sewn in sort of just under the nipple. So they were very interesting. They were kind of hot because of the...
hot
disobedient,
as in
not
warm or...
No, as in...
No,
it was quite,
hot. Actually.
It was quite... It was like an act of disobedience, like that actually was, of course, a turn-on, which if I go back to my uni days, it makes perfect sense. People explaining sociology and stuff, yeah. So
another thing is that they get given to you once you go through a certain, I guess it's like a christening, but I don't remember the name for it. So, Mark's...
No, I can't remember the name either. It had an unusual term.
Yes.
Anyhow.
So once you go through that, along with the rest of your holy stuff that you're given, you're given like... the Bible and the holy water or something, and then they give you these undergarments. And they have been referred to by non-Mormons as magic underwear, and apparently that is very offensive to Mormons.
I can imagine that being offensive, yes.
Yeah, so refer to them as temple garments.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully they wear more than that in the temple, though. I'm assuming they do. But
oh, well, presumably.
Yeah. Could be a very interesting... service.
Do they only have one set, or do they have more than one?
Oh, that's a good question, because if you're only given the one when you're going through this ceremony, Mark knows the answer.
You can buy them online.
Oh.
Do
you have to put in like a membership number?
You do. That's the catch. You have to put in a membership number, so you can buy them online, because you're supposed to wear them all the time. So you wouldn't want to be wearing the same pair. That would not be very attractive.
Anyway, if you put on weight as well, you'd need...
Yeah, it's just not going to work.
Do you wear non-Mormon underwear under your Mormon underwear?
He just wore the Mormon underwear. So
okay.
There was no other underwear.
Because they're not very... they don't really hold anything in place.
No, but they look quite comfy, though.
Okay,
so,
but the women's version, what about a bra? Do they not wear bras?
Ooh.
That's a good question. It doesn't look like, from the photos you can see, it doesn't look like it would be very supportive.
It doesn't look like it's very supportive. That's what we're getting to.
If there are any Mormon women listening, they could probably let us know.
Or Mormon men. You would probably know about the women's clothing as well. But yeah.
You don't have to identify yourself if you want to.
No.
Messages.
Yeah. But we love getting information here at the Spirit Lounge, and it's completely judgment-free here. This is a safe place to tell us your story. So definitely send us a message, 0427-JOY949, or email on air at joy.org.au. Thanks, Clayton, for your input.
No problem. I was just walking past and had stuff. So.
Well, that's good. We were going to get to that, but it's good to have an actual real-life example. Mm. Not that you're wearing any, but that would have been great.
But you've got more... up-close experience than the rest of us.
And I got to, dating him, I got to find out information about the Mormon religion, which was great because I love learning new stuff. And even though I'm not religious, I love learning about religion. So,
yeah, I love learning about every religion too. Changes my mind on things. Yeah.
Cool.
So moving on from there, where do we go to next?
Do you want to talk about Sitsit?
Is that a word in a language that I'm not familiar with?
Stand.
Stan.
Lay no, down, lay it's down. Not Stan.
I thought, well, since we're talking about Mormon underwear.
Let's talk about other kinds of underwear.
Let's talk about undergarments, not so much underwear. So we've talked about Sikh have special undies. Mormons have undies and a shirt. So we're sort of moving up the body, if you like. So let's talk about tzitzit. So for those of you who don't know what tzitzit are, if you look at Orthodox Jewish men, you will see they have these little white strings hanging down.
Ah, yes. Hanging down from
underneath
where?
Their shirts.
Oh.
Just hanging.
Just hanging.
You don't know where they come from because you can't see
them. They sort of come
that.
Out from underneath their shirts, just little, and there'll be four little clusters of them, and they're tzitzit.
Do tell us more.
So so tzitzit comes from a commandment in the Torah, which says that on the corners of your garment you will hang tzitzit, these little strings. And so for very observant Jewish men, they will wear what is called a katan talit, which means little prayer shawl. And on the and that's a four-cornered garment, usually like a T-shirt without the seams sewn up, if you like. That's the most common variety that you can get. And on each corner they have
a little
tzitzit.
So it's like a bib? So it's just got a head hole?
Yeah, basically a head hole. And some of them have little armholes, some of them don't. They just sort of sit over as like a shawl.
Yep.
And for some men, they will, part of, it's depends on how you interpret the law, but part of what they do is the way the Torah is written, it talks about you will look upon your tzitzit, so they believe that they should be showing at all times. And that's what these little strings that you will often see hanging out from underneath Jewish men's shirts are. They're called tzitzit.
What's the significance of the tzitzit?
I'm not really sure, other than in the Torah it talks about being a reminder of God being omnipresent, ever-present. And so it's another way to remind you that God's around all the time. It's a biblical commandment, but it's kind of like wearing a kippah. Kippah has been given that same sort of understanding, not in the same way as a tzitzit. Tzitzit is considered much more significant, but that's what they are. That's where it comes from. It's to remind you that God is omnipresent, ever with you. So when you look down upon your tzitzit, you'll remember God.
So. And that's, I mean, like a common theme in other, I mean, I think that's, for example, for Christians who wear crosses, that's another, it's a reminder about the sort of fundamentals of our faith. So, oh my gosh, Mark has actually brought props.
So I do have one in the studio, which you can't see.
We'll take a photo at an opportune time.
At an opportune time, so you can understand what a tzitzit is, or a talit.
Do you wear a tzitzit?
Not very often, no.
Are there a particular amount of strings or pieces of tassel that are intertwined together, or is that not defined?
Yes, there is. I believe the number is 8 off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to count them in the break and we can work it out. But yeah, there are. So the tzitzit, which is these little pieces. The tzitzit actually just refers to the strings on the corner.
Yeah.
And if there's not four, the garment is considered not kosher, it's not usable. So you have to have four tzitzit. But if one should come off, the garment is no longer kosher and you would remove all the tzitzit. And then it's just
you
a
can
piece
just
of cloth.
Replace it?
You can replace it if you want.
Oh, okay. Yep. I know in, for example, at some Christian weddings, they have bits of rope or fabric, and there's three pieces, and they make like a braid out of it, and that's about like the two people and God all being intertwined together. So I thought maybe there was significance around that sort of idea because they're intertwined somewhat.
There's a whole heap of things that I can't remember off the top of my head about the making of tzitzit. But I just thought, since we were talking about Mormon underwear, let's talk about, this is the closest you'll get in the Jewish world. There's no special undies for Jews. We can wear whatever we like. The interesting thing about, like we talk about a tzitzit, and this is actually called, it's called a talit, a katan talit, which just means small. Now, a talit is a prayer shawl. So a Jewish prayer shawl is what only technically Jewish men, but some Jewish women wear it in the Reform movement. It's the big prayer shawls that you will see only worn on a Saturday morning only when the Torah is read from, and not where worn overnight. So that comes is part of the more liturgical dress, if you like. So that's the Jewish equivalent. So we might have a talk about liturgical dress in other traditions just after this break. You're on the Spirit Lounge. And that was Any Dream Will Do, sung by John Barrowman, which is kind of interesting tonight on the Spirit Lounge. We've been talking about religious clothing, and just we've been talking about the Jewish practice of wearing a tallit, which is a prayer shawl, and the practice of tzitzit. And I was right, there are 8 cords in a tzitzit, which makes it kosher. But it's interesting, we've sort of gone from undergarments to outer garments and what you would wear in a service, because obviously a tallit is something that Jewish men at least will wear, but some Jewish women will wear as well in terms of at a Torah service. But I suppose it goes along, Claudine, in terms of looking at the religious attire of priests in the Christian liturgies.
And I was when you were describing the tzitzit, and I was imagining it inaccurately, but and we'll note that that song came from Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, which is, of course, from Genesis. Oh, I should know this. The story of Joseph, and who was given a special coat, and coats are significant as well. And so, when you were talking about the tzitzit, what I was actually imagining was something that priests in the Catholic tradition wear, which is a chasuble, and
is that the big tassel that hangs around their waist?
No,
that's something else.
That's just to hold your cassock up, if that's what you're thinking. The chasuble is, and we had a photo of this on Facebook. So it's the chasuble is worn by the priest who is celebrating the service of the Mass. So it's there's a couple of different styles, but the one that I've seen is it's almost not quite round, but it's supposed to refer to the seamless garment that Jesus wore at the Last Supper. So that's another kind of coat or a robe. It's interesting. It's become a bit of there was a moment in the 19th century when the Church of England was fighting about, with the Church of England being a bit divided between the more Catholic side and the more Protestant side. The Catholic side was saying we want to bring the chasuble back and to affirm our origins in the Catholic Church, and it caused an uproar among the more Protestant Anglicans, so the chasuble actually became a symbol of this division between what some people call the high and the low Anglicans. But that's just one example of clothing that's worn in worship as opposed to in ordinary life. And it's been said, I don't know how truthfully, but among the Anglo-Catholic churches, there's often a significant population of gay men. And when I was very new to this, people would keep saying to me, this church is full of gay men because it gives us an opportunity to dress up. And being somebody who's not really into dressing up, that didn't really make sense to me. But I think there might be something there.
Mm.
But it was interesting because Rachel's talked about her dad wearing Hawaiian shirts in church, which in one sense is a complete opposite, but in another sense it's another statement. It's also another kind of celebration. It just looks very different. Yeah. And was it something that he did very often?
Yes. So my dad, he would often explain that sometimes he just needed to wake the congregation up. He wanted to make sure that it wasn't just any old sermon. And when he did that, he would wear something loud. And it's funny because actually on Stand Up Straight, I came in to talk to Michelle and Stephanie and Clayton, and we were talking about how Paige had sent a message in to them talking about her dad singing and dancing around in his underwear. And then I said, do you know what? The only time I could picture my dad doing that is if he was going to do a sermon and decided to show up in his underwear he often did things that would stop people and make them think. So, like, one service, he got someone to answer their phone during the middle of a service and got a child to yell out and stuff so that he could go, like, these are the distractions of the world, but is it going to take you away from God and blah, blah, blah. So he did do things like wear a Hawaiian shirt, but that wasn't just for waking people up. He also just really enjoyed wearing Hawaiian shirts. So,
yeah. It's funny. I was thinking earlier today about I was at an ordination service on Black Saturday, which we didn't realise was going to be Black Saturday at the time, but it was, you know, something like 43 degrees, and this was in St. Paul's Cathedral, so there's, I don't know, hundreds of clergy wearing their very hot and heavy robes, and they're actually, and I knew because I'd seen them earlier that most of them had, you know, shorts and t-shirts and thongs underneath. So yeah. in a way, having special clothes is a way of making you equal and sort of hiding. You can sort of put away what you're wearing underneath and kind of put yourself.
Neutralize
yourself.
Yeah. But if any, I think it's a dress up thing. It's to show I'm the boss, so everybody listen to me. That's what I see when I see churches where the priests are wearing like specifically dressed up, especially like the Catholic Church where they wear jewels and like heavy metal around their necks and stuff. I'm just like, you just want everybody to know that you're the boss, standing up the front and stuff. Whereas I always found it quite humbling that, you know, someone like my dad who's wearing a Hawaiian shirt and just like sneakers can get up and tell a sermon just as well as the person who is wearing extravagant clothing. So, yeah.
Well, the argument from the other side is that sort of extravagant clothing is meant to reflect the glory and the beauty of God. And,
yes.
And it's owned by, it's a property, it's not the property of the priest, it's owned by the church. Yeah. So, you know, the priest doesn't. Can't afford this sort of stuff on their own, mostly. But it's, yeah, it is something that a lot of people have difficulty with, because you think, well, if you're spending $500 on a set of vestments, there's other things you could do with those $500. And I think that's it's a fair question to ask. It's don't have a specific answer to that, but
I think. Oh, sorry, Mark, do you want to jump in?
I was going to go off on another tangent. I was just thinking about the tallit because it's the closest thing we have in Judaism, but it actually has a practical purpose. So in Judaism, you're not allowed to touch the Torah scrolls with your hands. So the way most people would touch it with is with a tallit, which is the cloth, the big cloth that we wear. And there's a good reason for that, because these scrolls are made out of leather. They're kosher. They're painted on the letters. So human oil out of your skin damages the scroll. So it's it's a way of taking something very practical and making it look very holy. Now, I wonder whether whether that's also part of, you know, we talk about vestments, but it's also about saying, for me, I wonder if it's about saying that this is a really important occasion and we've gone all out. It's like having the Queen around for dinner. You're not going to get out your cheap Target or Kmart or wherever you've got of those cups and saucers that you use every day. You're going to get out something that your mum bought you. Aren't you? Like, that's what it's about.
I'm pretty sure my mum bought me cups and saucers from Kmart. But yes, yeah. Definitely. I just one final point on this. I think religious clothing is almost more of a tradition thing now for all of the religions. It's just traditional. There's, other than obviously you mentioned the purpose of using the tallit for the Torah. There, a lot of the traditions no longer serve the purpose that they once did. But, yeah, very interesting.
And we've had a show talking all about religious clothing, and we've gone in some interesting places. So thank you to Clayton, who came in and said some special memories about Mormon undergarments. But also thanks to Rachel and Claudine, who have been part of this wonderful show. So we're going to play one last song, and it's called Stack Hat by the Rosie Burgess Trio, but I'm told Rachel doesn't know what a stack hat is.
A stack hat is an 80s design icon from Australia. It's a bicycle helmet. It's a very large bicycle helmet. I wore a stack hat when I was riding my BMX, so I'm showing my age. And it's good night from myself, Claudine.
Good night from Rachel.
And good night from Mark.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.